Right, welcome to my talk about the open source and H323. My name is Andrzej Hajto. I'm a fourth year ethical hacking student at Harvard. I worked about 2 years with VoIP, mostly as a sysadmin, but also I just supported VoIP platforms, mostly based on H323. You can contact me on email, Jabber, and this is my website. So any question after the talk or something, so feel free to contact me. What are we going to, I'm going to talk about the VoIP in general, kind of introduction to VoIP, then we follow what H323 is, its architecture, then I'm going to speak about Node.jk, it's an open source gatekeeper. All these terms I will explain later on. And I will finish with H323 security aspects. Right, so first of all, everyone uses probably VoIP, but just not sure what's voice over IP. It's a VoIP is a voice over internet protocol. It's a technology which allows for communication over IP networks. And unlike the traditional public switch telephone network, voice is transmitted over internet or other PAC switch networks. However, we are focused on the internet because that's the most popular medium nowadays. How actually VoIP works? It's you speak, then it goes to the audio to digital converter. It's kind of a microchip. Then it's digitalized. Then it's passed to the protocols. Goes to the internet. Then goes to the other side, and then digital audio converter, and then you hear voice. So that's the basics of the VoIP. We are not going to go in details about the VoIP too much. What I need to use VoIP actually, it's that's the most common things. Most of you probably use them, know them. It's a VoIP gateway. It's kind of a bridge between conventional telephone networks and VoIP infrastructure, which means like actually internet. VoIP phones, maybe a lot of you see some of these things. It's kind of a normal phone. However, instead of a RJ11 connector, it has a RJ45 connector, which allows you to connect to the Ethernet port, Ethernet cable. And there's software, which just plenty of them. For example, IKEA, and there's like Skype, you can tell the Skype is the soft phone as well, so that's kind of three basic things which you need to use VoIP actually. The most common technologies which using VoIP are SIP, H323 and the Skype. That's the most popular protocols actually, and maybe not protocols, it's a technology. Because whereas SIP and Skype there are protocols, the H323 it's not exactly protocol. That's what I'm going to explain now. Because H323 it's a set of standards, so it's kind of an umbrella for protocols which are used to set up a connection and make a phone call and all this stuff. So it's been approved in 1996 by the ITU-T. It's a telecommunication standardization sector, and what it does, it actually provides audio and visual data transmission over internet protocol networks and also guaranteed quality of service. So it's not only about the audio, H323 is also about the visual transmission, which is worth to remember. What are the benefits of H323? So first of all, codec standards, because it's a kind of a standard. So all codecs, it means algorithm which compress the voice, because the voice after it being digitalized needs to be compressed somehow. So that's what codec does. So it's the standard for it. It's independent from network. So as we can see, H323 runs on the top of a common network architecture. So it means if any network architecture implements something which improves her, so H323 take advantage of it. Platform application independence, not tied to any hardware operating system. So there are H323 implementation for Windows, Mac, Linux, Unix, and many vendors use the H323. So thanks to that as a standard, so using the box, Cisco box, you can be sure that you speak, you'll be able to speak to the someone who's like, I don't know, other company or whatever. And also it provides the bandwidth management for video and audio traffic, so that's also important in case of it take care of to it could take case of a fact that if you're transmitting the VoIP, the bandwidth is just regulated by the H323 protocols. Why actually we should take care about the H323? There is a SIP, there is a Skype. Well, as you can see, that's the data from 2006 when PSTN, so it's just regular networks, and it's 75.8% of international voice minutes. So then Skype is 4.4%, which is a lot. Other protocols, it's 4%, including SIP and probably other implementation. H323, it's almost 16%. So mostly H323 is used for communication between telecoms to terminate and transmit the data. So that's why it's a huge percentage. Probably nowadays SIP it's got much higher a part of it, because it's, whereas the thing is, the H323 wasn't created for internet networks. It's kind of it was implemented to the internet networks, where SIP is like was created for this purpose. So that's, I presume, 3 years later the figures will be different. But I think still H323 will take a big part of it. What do we need to actually to have a H323 network? There are like that's a four elements. Not all of them are necessary to use. However, like most important is the terminal. It's the second one. It's kind of a endpoint. So actually, to make a connected call, you need like two endpoints. So you need two phones, one soft phone, two PCs, whatever. Anyway, on the PCs, there'll be still a soft phone. So that's a thing. Always has to be. We have a gateways. They translate communication procedures and transmission formats. It's kind of a, as I said, interface between the PSTN and H323 in this case. Sorry, that's a mistake. It should be H323 network. Another entity you can call is MCU units. It provides support for conferences between three or more endpoints. And gatekeeper, which also optional, however very often used within the H323 network. It provides address translation, control, access, and sometimes also bandwidth management for endpoints, for other endpoints, because you can call those three things, like endpoints, and the gatekeeper is kind of a separate thing, kind of a server, which manages all these things. Now, briefly, I'll go through the just mine. Because, as I said, H323 is a set of protocols, so it actually it's not a one protocol like SIPO. It's a set of protocols, so it uses a lot of other protocols, and that's also why it's not so popular as a SIP, because of the fact it's quite complicated, and I found it really complicated, and I still know maybe 5% about it, and maybe less. And it carrying the medium which is used also in a SIP, I presume in a Sky protocol as well, is a RTP protocol, which is a protocol which defines how devices or software transmit and receive the data. So actually that's a medium which carry the data, voice or video data. It's described in the RFC. It's really interesting RFC, but really long. And the other protocol of H323 is HTTP 5.0. is a call signaling. It's used to establish a connection between two H323 endpoints, so actually a soft phone or gateways or anything. So that's the other main protocol. Another one is H245. It's exchange terminal capabilities and creates media channels, so it just inform the other side, like other endpoint, about like capabilities we have, like bandwidth and everything. So that's the other protocol. And important protocol in case of the securities aspect, I'm going to talk later, it's a H225 RAS. It's a call, it's like it performs like registration, admission, control, bandwidth, changes, status. In general, it informs about it exchange information between endpoint and gatekeepers. So I will show later on like exactly what is this protocol about. And H.235 is a security and encryption for H.323. It's kind of a set of the standards. All these standards were released by I2ET, the organization I was talking before. And there is an interesting document. Unfortunately, it's about 300 pages to go through it, and it describes in details all H.323 protocols, how do they work, and all these things. How do they look like on a seven-layer model? So, as I said, it's a bit complicated because there's so many protocols in this, and a lot of them are actually not on a particular layer. So, like RAS, it's can tell it's between 4, 5, and 6 layer. Same like the H.225. So that's why I said it's much more complex than a C protocol. And maybe that's why it's not as popular. Right, that was a short introduction. I mean, we don't have time to go in details, and all these things I'll just try to show just bits and pieces. Now I'd like to talk a bit about the gatekeeper, the server I was talking before. It's called the GNU gatekeeper. It's called other, now it's a kind of acronym, it's GNU GK. So it's on the public license, no fees, full source code available. Many companies run this server, earning a lot of money using it. Combines features of gatekeeper, border controller, traverse server, proxy server. It's like kind of a soft switch for the H.323 network. It's kind of a take care about the management of the calls, about the as I said before, like lot of stuff. It's actually to install the GNU GK, you need like that's a main libraries you need. That's an open implementation of H.323, which is open H.323 and PWLib. These libraries or H.323 plus and PTLib. Personally, I use. When I was running the gatekeeper, I used the first one, combination of the first two. So
that's what you need to install first before you'd like to install the GNU GK.
How to run the gatekeeper? It's the best is after you install those two libraries. That's the command you need to run. GNU GK TTT -c, so that's a command to just inform about a lot of things, so it's like kind of verbose. That's a config file -c, where the config file is, and that's a log name where all the logs about what's happening the gatekeeper goes. And what I do usually is like also run on a separate console this one, tire -f log file, so just to see the scrolling of there, because this command just shows you in the real time any information which appears in the log.
After you run the gatekeeper successfully, that's how it looks like.
It looks weird. Yeah, that's quite looks complicated. However, there's a web interface for a gatekeeper. However, I like rather the consoles and all this stuff, so I prefer use this one. So the text version. So after you run this, and that's what you see. And actually, that tells you that everything is going fine. Yeah. How to manage the gatekeeper? So actually, just telnet on the local host on the port 7000. That's how it looks like. That's a one of the configuration, and after this you can enter the commands. The commands include, so as I said, it's kind of a soft switch. So if two endpoints communicate, making connections, so the voice in a voice over IP goes through the RTP protocol, which means the voice transmission goes peer to peer, so it's between one endpoint and second endpoint. However, all management stuff goes through the gatekeeper. So if we have like a H323 network, and we have like a lot of endpoints, lot of gateways, a lot of soft phones, IP phones, so all they register into this one gatekeeper. So if you give the command registers or R, I think it's, so then you see the list of the all the endpoints which are registered to the gatekeeper. So then you can call, they can call between each other.
So that's the way how you deal with the managing of the gatekeepers, actually using the command. As I said, there is a web interface. I never use it, so I have no idea how it works.
That's a website when you can find brilliant documentation, in my opinion. There's everything is planned step by step about how to set up the config file. I didn't went to the details of the config file because it's really, really long and quite complicated. And sometimes if you read the config file, so it's straightforward, all right, you know what's this. However, in the gatekeeper, it's like, you know, just, it's really weird. However, documentation is really good, and if you're interested in this, it's worth to see. So to recap, it's like, as I said, it's not the necessary thing to run the gatekeeper within the H323 network. However, it's worth to do it because it provides a lot of optional things, which, like, for example, it can tell the other side, all right, we use too much bandwidth, so you should change the bandwidth, or also provides, like, if you got two endpoints behind the firewalls, so you can connect through the gatekeeper the information about IPs and everything. So yeah, it's worth to have a look. Well, we go as I said, it's like, that's a weird presentation because there's too many topics I would like to speak about, and just wanted to just, as I said, bits and pieces about like what's VoIP, introduction. I didn't want to go too much into deep, and also wanted a bit to tell more technical stuff, so that should take much, much more. So unfortunately, I had to cut down the presentation. So now I'll tell something about the H323 security. That was some of the pictures you will see, maybe they're not the best quality because I took them from my project I was doing on the end of third year. So I didn't have the time to resize them or something, like change the quality of them. Right, first of all, that's interesting. If you run the gatekeeper, if you run the VoIP box or anything, that's an interesting port. Interesting port. So doing any, if you're trying to attack, let's say attack, hack system or server, first of all you have to do the discovery, what it's all about. So that's enumeration take care of. So if you want to find out the gatekeeper which you want to attack, so first of all you have to find it somehow. So that's for example, you're looking for open port 1718 or 1719 or 1720, so that will tell you that possibly these machines run gatekeeper. So like in this case, so using the nmap, you just normal scanning, and you just list the interesting ports, scanning all subnet or 10 network, and then it goes. So let's, like for example here, it finds like open port 1720. It actually shows this H323 or Q931, which is one of the protocols used by H323.
Right. That I was saying that I will tell more about the RAS RAS protocol. This protocol is about dealing between, it's about exchanging information between the gatekeeper and endpoint. This is how it looks like usually. So we have an endpoint. The endpoint sends the data, the frame of a gatekeeper request. So actually it's looking for a gatekeeper. There is a network. Yeah, let's say it's a network and endpoint. Okay, so it would like to find the gatekeeper. So it sends the gatekeeper request. Then any gatekeeper or more gatekeepers, because it can be more in the one network, request or gatekeeper confirm or gatekeeper reject. So which means like, or yeah, I'm your gatekeeper or I'm not your gatekeeper, depends. So if it sends gatekeeper confirm, that then this endpoint connects to this gatekeeper. We are talking about the enumeration still. So now we are talking about the user enumeration, because of the fact, like, if you log into the, if you have a soft phone or anything, anybody use a soft phone, you have to put your login and password. So somehow that's a kind of authentication process. When first of all is the gatekeeper discovery, and then actual endpoint connects to the gatekeeper. So that's another like registration request. Endpoint send registration request after it discovered the gatekeeper, and gatekeeper, okay, I'm confirming you can use me. It's a registration confirm and registration reject. It depends. So in this case, it'd be like. If it would connect, so that would be registration confirmed. So why it's important? Because if you run Wireshark or any other scanner, let's say Wireshark looks quite good, so that's how the exchange looks like. That's the IP of the endpoint, that's the IP of the gatekeeper. So it sends like gatekeeper request, gatekeeper confirm, there's registration request, and then it reject. In this case, the gatekeeper reject the endpoint because of the wrong password, I think, as far as I remember. So in case if the authentication will fail, so the gatekeeper send the registration reject frame. As I said, the problem with it is, if you can see that there is a gatekeeper confirm. As you can see, there is a plain username inside the frame. So that's a problem. That's what I'm saying. That's why that was important to know how the exchange works, because in this case, actually, you can find the username when the endpoint trying to connect to the gatekeeper. You are able to get the username. The best bit is, there is a username, but also there is a password based with hashing authentication. That's one of the three types of authentication H3 can use. So this one is the most popular because it's quick and enough sophisticated. But the best bit is, it also sends the hash of the password, which means having the username and the hash, we run can able. That was a simple password due to the fact I need it for the project, so I just need to the proof of concept. So I'm just using the simple thing. So actually, user 39 was the username, and also user 39 was the password in this case. So in this, now we have the username and we have the password. So actually, we can connect having the other box, other gateway, other soft phone. We can pretend that, okay, we are this user 39, So, and thanks to this, we can spoof the IF164 alias, which is like, one IF164 alias is a phone number and plan connected to the endpoint. So actually, you can just a number, like, you can like 444, okay, and you have like, inside the institution, you got like an internal number, so. That's the IF164 alias, for example. So when username and password cracks, spoofing is done. So actually, you can have a situation when, don't know, there is like important things, And the important decision has to be made based on what I'm going to say. So someone having my password and my username can phone like CEO of the company and tell, okay, he will see on the ID of the display, okay, internal number 444, that's this guy, and then, it's like many things can happen,
Did you, intercept it to take, help desks?
Exactly, because you can, exactly, brilliant example. Like, you can, all right, I'm calling from this room, and help desk knows that in this room there is only this one guy, and see the on the ID display, the on the display ID of the number, okay, so, you know, many
you
things.
You can call up pretending to be help desk and asking people for their passwords.
Exactly, or other way. So, dangerous thing. Other thing which is a H.255 registration reject is kind of a denial of service attack. So during endpoint registration for the registration request, actually to connect to the network, so to be authenticated and have possibility to call, to make a phone call between other endpoints within this network, using the, you know, I don't know how to pronounce it, but the VNAKK, that's a software Python script, you can send registration reject message, which I saw before, because if you can, after registration request, gatekeeper can tell, okay, registration confirm. But in this case, you're sending registration reject message to whole network, and looks like this. So there is a syntax of the send syntax of the script, and actually it's like it looks like it sends from the endpoint things that this registration reject is sent from the gatekeeper. So actually it can't connect to the gatekeeper. So actually you can make call you can. You can't register to the gatekeeper, so actually you can't make any phone call. It's kind of a denial of service attack. Really dangerous in case of you really need to make a phone call. Like, and of course, there is possible about the VoIP. It's not only about the H323, it's about the SIP as well. And any VoIP protocols which uses RTP, it's possible. That's only the screenshot from the last moment when actually you can just record the phone. Which is just scary because you're just talking to someone and then I can record this phone call in a WAV file and just record it and then play it and do whatever I want, you know what I mean? It's possible also to inject the files, but I just wanted to show you just few things just to let you know, to allow you to realize that how vulnerable VoIP is and exactly. And the other thing is, that's actually thing when during my project I find out this thing, and I'm not sure it's been released, so I just briefly, if you manipulate the packet which is sent from the gatekeeper during the exchange of the, again, RAS information, so if you there's a few fields which you have to change. No, based the fields are based on how to change it. You will know based on the fact that there are a few things, very variable. But as I say, I'm not going to talk about it. Like, it's like not the to say things. So, and using the Nemesis, you can actually inject the packet from the gatekeeper. I mean, you can pretend that to this endpoint. There is this packet which is created before as on the previous that's the name of the file. So you can inject this packet to the gatekeeper to the conversation between two endpoints, and in this case endpoints will think that there is the gatekeeper send the information about the end of the call, which means the call will be disconnected. So it took me a while to figure out what needs to be changed, how it works. However, it works perfectly. That's scary because it's using this one and using the. It's a bit take a bit while to prepare this packet because it's not the default packet. You have to change any during any call. You have to just sniff the data and then according to the data you have changed the information inside the packet. However, it works and that's a scary thing as well. And that's only a few things. I show you about the vulnerabilities of VoIP because there is many, many more of them. And it's not about only H323, but also about the SIP and other things. However, to recap, it's like, yeah, H323 is an interesting thing, interesting set of protocols, interesting technology, and if anyone is interested in VoIP, like in details, so I think he would like the H323 protocols, and there's a lot of fun with them. You know, so... I'm really enjoying them. Like, So I'm in networking. I'm a network freak, but you know, packets and all this stuff. So if you want to know more, that's a brilliant site.
First one, second one, that's a lot of information about the Vault, not only about HP23, but just massive. The brilliant information. That's the website of Fukinou.gk. That's the ITU in my website, when you can find out the specification for 300 pages specifications for HP23. Interesting, worth to read in my opinion. And that's my references. Very, if you like interesting VoIP, great book about the VoIP and security. So I really recommend this one. A lot of things I read about it. That's the book which showed me the possibility of how you can hack VoIP and how you can find vulnerabilities in the VoIP. So I hope you enjoy. Any questions? Hopefully not everyone sleeps, so that's good.
I'm guessing that there are countermeasures you can use yourself to prevent this hacking. I mean, can you?
Well, not really. Not everything, you know what I mean? So it's like there are also, you can encrypt the stuff, however.
But you can still do this packet interruption.
Well, yeah, actually. I didn't find out any countermeasure again. I didn't went so much into details about it, but. I spent a lot of time analyzing the traffic between, like, especially the RSA protocol traffic, how you can intercept it and how many things you can do with this. So that's actually the thing I'm going to explore now, the countermeasures, because I'm really into the VoIP security now. So.
Is there any difference between VoIP and telephony?
No. That's the other term for the same thing. It's always like voice over IP, telephone over IP, name it as well.
Yeah.
It always goes over internet protocols. So, anything else?
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.